Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Hello, and welcome back to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. This week, we are continuing to read Blood Games. Last week, we read... My question was met with silence. All eyes were on Maxine. I wasn't making a power move. I was just tired of not getting anything done. Government organizations across the nation were on the lookout for me, and I wasn't going to twiddle my thumbs any longer. I needed the resources Maxine used to have, but would make do with what was available. Do what he says, Maxine rubbed the side of her head. I'll have Frank on standby, just in case. And now... Episode 12. The sprawling data raider complex had a large footprint on the outskirts of the city. Several structures were more than 10 stories high, but most were less than 5. It was an industrial location with residences and office space starting up a handful of blocks to the left. Chris had checked with Jolene 10 minutes ago, and we still weren't any closer to locating Reed's home. So I had continued on our way here. I had never been out this way and figured it was a good time to visit, especially since I had wheels. It wasn't likely that anything would turn up, but I had been outside the Data Raider headquarters numerous times, hoping to spark an idea of how to locate Reed. It was time for a different perspective on the company. Perhaps it might help me to figure out what I should do next. I doubted Reed came to the site much, but I was antsy to be doing something, if only to stay busy. I parked on the street with our car facing the complex's gate. We were several blocks back to avoid both the guards and any cameras that might be connected to FaceRec. Chris had barely spoken during the drive. What she had said had been short and clipped, but I did not care. If she had been more open to my claims about Pack, I would have told her about Reed weeks ago. Or if she would have looked into the kidnapped children, she might have found something that would have facilitated the conversation. She had nobody to blame but herself. The awkwardness became worse after we parked. I could tell she wanted me to ask, and even though I did not want to give in, if something were to happen, I needed her to be ready to deal with it, not stewing in anger. "What's eating at you?" I asked. "You had many opportunities to brief me in on Reed Warner. After all I've done, you should not have held out on me. You haven't done anything for me that didn't provide substantial benefit to Franz Flowers." "I tracked down your mother," she said. "Tell me that wasn't an attempt to recruit me," I said. "Look me in the eye and say it." "I didn't do it at Maxine's direction. I did it on my own initiative. I wanted to help you. Can you say you weren't hoping it wouldn't bring me into the fold? Honestly. People are not as black and white as you sometimes want to see them, Jake," she said. "I was trying to get you something of value. I may have hoped it would make you more inclined to work with me, but I did it because I cared." She was right. Nailing down a single motivation for any action wasn't always clear-cut. I shrugged. "My motives are rarely singular, I suppose." "Can we agree the next time you have critical information," she said, "you don't hold it back from me?" "Are you going to follow leads when I ask you to?" I asked. "That's not fair," she said. "How many times have I helped you? The one time I didn't. I got my head handed to me for that. Isn't that enough? Do you need to ream me too?" I shook my head. "If I'd known you'd lost your tactical employees..." I left the thought unfinished. It had slipped out before I had thought better of it. Chris bristled. "We are not helpless, and you need help. Reed is not some former Black Brick agent with a vendetta against you, Jake. If he is behind this, you can't stop him by yourself." "Why do you think I came back?" I asked. "I brought up a monocular I'd pilfered from the equipment room back at Franz Flowers. They might have lost their tactical team, but they were still fully equipped. I had grabbed several SIG M400 rifles along with ammunition and put them in back. I had never shot this particular weapon, but was familiar enough with the platform that I knew how to use them." Chris had arched an eyebrow when she had seen the guns, but had not said anything. I wasn't planning to do any shooting, but it seemed a good idea to make sure we had something larger than pistols if we were going to go out chasing Reed. He tended to keep a lot of bodyguards. The compound was well lit, giving me a clear view of everything between the buildings in front of me. A guard passed by the gate, holding the leashes of several dogs. The parking lot appeared to be almost full, but I'd need a full view of it to know for sure. Was the complex manned 24 hours a day, or did they have a bunch of people working late? I doubted a Data Raider security response team was based here because it didn't seem an ideal location from which to respond to threats that came through personal security apps. It was all industrial warehouses until the hospital, which was several blocks away from the opposite side of the compound. There would not be much need to have a team located here. I had never looked into it, but had always assumed the Data Raider security response teams were located at least premises throughout the city. How else could they claim such a quick response time? Even if they had a team here, the most they would have had at this location, there were too many cars for just a single team. I assumed they had other ongoing operations that ran around the clock. What happened with Maxine's partner? I asked. The way she talked made me think of a former lover. Her ex-husband, Chris answered. Anything more about it will have to come from her. I recommend you don't ask. Why did they set up their own corporate espionage organization? I asked. Chris smiled. Your assumptions about us are wrong, Jake. She'll tell you when she's ready. Are they philanthropists? I asked. Is this their version of making the world a better place? There is no they, Chris said. Maxine will tell you when she is ready. Her voice was getting heated, so I backed off. We sat in silence for an hour before her phone beeped. She checked it before leaning back in her seat. That was Jolene, she said. Still nothing. I'm going to sleep. She muttered something I was certain she meant for me to hear. This is a waste of time. I let it pass without comment. That was the nature of doing an investigation. Most things were not fruitful. If we knew where to go, we wouldn't have to use up resources figuring out next steps. The minutes ticked by, and the adrenaline coursing through my veins started to fade. My eyelids became heavy, and I found myself wishing we had stopped for caffeine. In my hurry to do something, I had not even given it a thought. In an effort to keep my eyes open, I scanned what little I could see of the buildings, hoping to come across something that might give us a clue as to what Reed Warner was trying to accomplish, or how to find him. After 30 minutes had passed without discovering anything useful, I admitted to myself that I was grasping at straws. It was a small wonder that Chris was grumpy with me. In my haste to do something, we ended up doing nothing. She was tolerating me, but I figured I was fast using up what goodwill I might have left. Perhaps I had made a mistake in coming here. The last 7 months had thrown me off my game. Habits that used to be second nature were starting to slip. It would have been better to wait back at the base, either resting or planning. The seconds continued to slip away, and I yawned, shaking my head to stay awake. The area was quiet, and other than Data Raider's unique array of buildings, nothing looked interesting. I was on the verge of waking Chris so I could get some sleep when a black Suburban pulled up to the gate. I leaned forward, all thoughts of sleep disappearing from my mind. It was the same Suburban that had chased me outside of Toys and Toys and Toys warehouse. The rear bumper had a scratch I recognized. I had gotten a close look as it had driven away. I shook Chris's shoulder without taking my eyes off the vehicle. When she didn't respond, I made my efforts more vigorous. The driver rolled down the window as a guard approached. I did not have a good angle on the Suburban and was unable to make out the driver's face. The guard opened the gate and waved them through. As the Suburban disappeared around the corner to the left, I decided I was going to find out who was inside. "What's going on?" Chris asked, yawning and rubbing her eyes. "A black Suburban just went in," I said. "I'm leaving to get a better angle on it." She mumbled an unintelligible response, which I took to mean she understood. I left the SUV, carefully shutting the door after me. I wasn't positive the door had latched, but Chris engaged the lock, so I figured it would be good enough. I got a glimpse of her rolling her eyes through the window, and she wondered why I had a hard time trusting her with things. I went toward the complex until I came to an intersecting street and took a left. Once I had a building covering my movements, I broke into a run. Circling around the facility while remaining a couple of blocks out would take too much time, so I planned to get several blocks down before cutting back up the street toward the compound. It was a risk, and perhaps my desire for action was making me reckless, but it was time to get things moving. Considering the lateness of the hour, I was not surprised the sidewalks were deserted. A homeless man hunched in an alley used rags and newspapers to keep warm. A mangy dog growled at me, its eyes flashing in the light of a passing car. On the next street over, I headed back toward the complex, running until I arrived at the road that ran parallel to it. I slowed, checking for the Suburban and not seeing it. I scanned the fence line for cameras and saw that the closest was on a building 100 feet back. I was tempted to cross, but kept to the side. I was already on and continued at a fast pace. Hopefully, I wasn't moving quick enough to attract any attention. I still had another block before the end of the compound. Once there, I bit my lip, crossed the street, and followed the sidewalk. Doing my best to keep from drawing any attention to myself, if Chris saw what I was doing, she would be very upset. I looked at my watch several times and sped up each time, hoping that if anybody saw me, they would assume I was running late. But I was on thin ice. Who had some place they had to be at 2 a.m. that would take them past this complex? The thought did not dawn on me until I was too far in and committed to my approach. There still weren't any video cameras along the fence, so I figured I was at least safe from face wreck for the moment. I was approaching the far end of the compound before I found the Suburban. It was parked by a mobile building, and it appeared to be empty. Without realizing what I was doing, I slowed down. "What are you doing out this time of night?" Cursing silently, I spun and saw that the guard with the dogs had come out from behind one of the buildings I had just passed. How had I missed him? The dogs focused on me but remained quiet. I cursed so he could hear me, lowering my voice to mask it in case he had Spectrum running on his phone. "You startled me," I said, panting for breath and pretending to wipe sweat away from my brow. "You gotta be careful. You're gonna give somebody a heart attack." "What are you doing?" The guard's face was stern, showing no emotion. His voice was commanding. "A moonlighting cop." "What business is it of yours?" I continued away. The guard yelled, but I did not stop. There was a fence between us. I would be gone, long gone, before he got out. There was a fence between us. I would be long gone before he got out. I grimaced when I heard him say something into his radio. "Stop!" The guard ran to catch up to me, his dog in the lead, still quiet but not taking their eyes off of me. "I just want to ask you a few questions." "I got a place to be." I increased my speed so I was not quite running, but was getting there. "I'll call the cops," he said. I stopped, going right up to him at the fence line. "To tell them what?" "I was walking by your place. You have nothing on me." "Why are you running?" he asked. I barked a mirthless laugh and pointed straight ahead. "The hospital is 3 blocks that way. I'm coming from work and trying to make it to the birth of my child. If I don't make it, I'll make sure you pay." I took off again, and this time he couldn't follow because I was past the property line and he was stopped at the fence. I had not looked at the Suburban once, trusting my peripheral vision to alert me to any activity at the vehicle. Unfortunately, I was now committed to going in the direction I had pointed. I was glad I had noticed the hospital on Google Maps while I had been waiting for something to happen. I could feel the guard's eyes boring into my back, and it took every ounce of willpower I had to keep from turning around. If I were who I claimed to be, the guard would have left my mind as soon as I had turned around. I crossed the street and ran flat out, while once again checking my watch, hoping to sell the lie. I didn't stop until I was within sight of the hospital and was confident the guard could no longer see me. While I caught my breath, I watched for any signs that I was being followed and cursed the loss of time. I circled around to the Data Raider complex, approaching slowly and staying well back from where the guard would be able to see me. By the time I could get eyes on the Suburban again, a group of people were headed towards it. I pulled out my monocular when I spotted children. They walked without constraint, conversing with a man in the front. I was unable to make out the faces in the poor light, but I recognized the angular jaw of Reed Warner. Even though I could not see the features of the children, I didn't need to. I knew that Margaret Cox and Benji Hansen were with them. That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com, and you will receive a free ebook copy of War of the Fathers. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker. All rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LC.